Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I am super happy to be here because I get to hang out with awesome people. And who are these awesome people?
We have no idea.
I got nothing. But Sebastian, you're all really cool, too.
So what you're saying, Jeff, is you want us to speed this up so you can go hang out with awesome people.
Yep. And we can make that happen real quick. Great to be here. You're all awesome people. TSO hosts, go use them.
Bye.
let's see. TSO hosts. Check out the Daily News Show. Everyone's on these other podcasts and I have social media. Thanks for joining us. See you next week.
Also TSO host.
Let's go.
That's the 30-second summary of every show, basically.
Yeah.
It is. And the only part that I left out was the live
blah,
chat.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay, we'll go through the pretense of the other stuff. Ben, how are you?
I am fantastic. Having a little party tonight with Jeff and our mutual friend Dave Ginsburg for the 300th mm-hmm. episode of In Touch with iOS.
Wow, nice.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to that. 300 episodes is quite an accomplishment.
I mean, he's reached 300 episodes faster than I think we've reached 600 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patrice, you did the math just recently, mm-hmm. how many episodes of Big Show, Mac Show, and New Show, Daily News
yeah,
Show.
Yeah, I mean, at least based on how many shows are on our CMS, which I think it's not everything. I saw that there were a couple shows that had like episode 24 was the first one, so I'm guessing something got cut off like somewhere around 2009. Maybe there was another CMS before, but yeah, I mean, this would be 549 of the Big Show. The first show was December, actually. For the Big Show, I'm not sure, because that started before Mac, so there might be some missing, but the first show that's on our servers is December 5th, 2010. So
yeah, about right.
14 years.
About right from when I originally came on the show, mm-hmm. was that kind of era when it was called BagelTech still.
Yeah, that was BagelTech still, correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have no idea.
The Mac show, by the way, 616. Started a couple weeks later. But that's definitely the first episode because it's mentioned in the show notes. It's the first episode. So.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and we will let you know when we get to episode 666 of the Mac show.
I mean, that's going to happen this year, right? Not quite. Not quite. Next year.
Yes. There would be some irony if the Christmas quiz was episode 666.
Right, I was just going to say. Or maybe the prediction show.
The prediction show. Yeah, it's about...
Predict the end of the world.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
we're about 50 episodes away from that. So,
yeah, about a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have a 666 at Easter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be fun.
Hey, Ian, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Got a nice quiet week this week because Monday was day off for us because of Easter bank holiday. And sort of cruising into work, and tomorrow I have the day off too. I'm going to go and drive supercars on an airfield with my middle kids, so that'll be great fun.
Wow,
that sounds very cool.
Yeah, one of those experience days. You get a few minutes in a driving around some cones and on a disused airfield in a supercar. So all good fun.
Nice. Yeah. Does the car bank differently since the steering wheel is on the other side?
No. That, it's not. It's on the right side, so it works much better. Mm. See, that's the thing. It works better because it's on the other side. It's much more logical. It's silly Napoleon ruined everything for the rest of us. We had the idea correct in the first place, but Napoleon. What did he know? Romans had it right first.
There are so many problems that we can blame on Napoleon.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, do you know the U.S. and Canada are two of the only countries to switch from right to left?
Yeah, I heard that. And also, there's a European country, if name, I'm not sure whether it was Sweden or Norway or one of the North. Sweden.
Sweden,
there's pictures of the day they did it. There's some photos of everybody sort of, they went round at night and turned all the signs around. It's
That was Sweden.
Crazy.
Well, Italy did it too, right?
That I don't remember. I just know Sweden.
So
it's such a big undertaking to change it around, and it would make life so much easier if we did. Yeah. I mean, if I'm being a realist, it make things so much easier if we did, but there's so much to change at the wrong time. If we'd have gone at the emergence of the motor car after the war, say, or when it became more popular and people had more people had cars, then it would be fine. But now, with the amount of cars that are on the road here now, it would be tantamount to carnage. Darwin in action. You've never seen anything like it if you did that. Here or even on your side of the pond, if they decide to do it there, be just the same. It'd be like lemmings, I tell you. It'd be terrible.
if it didn't happen, why the roads were still dirt here, we would be right-hand drive.
Well, but the question is, the way people drive around here, would you notice?
Doesn't matter. That is so true.
So Brits can't drive on the right side of the road. Americans can't figure out metric. This is how nature balances things out.
Yeah. I don't know what else you can't figure out. 24-hour clocks either.
Oh, that's true.
That confuses a lot of folk. That confuses a lot of folk that I meet, and I've never understood why.
I'm like, it's so easy.
Exactly.
I do 24-hour clock, and that's what I've done for years. If someone sees like the clock on my computer or on my phone, because I actually have an analog watch face on my Apple Watch.
Of course you do.
Because of course I do. They're at a loss. They're like, why does your phone say 14:23 where the time is?
Kind of reminds me of Home Improvement, the show with Tim Allen. There's a couple episodes where that is kind of a thing. Like, his father-in-law is from the military, so he's using military time, which is 24-hour time, and he always gets confused.
Yeah, that's always what that's always what the Americans say. Oh, that's military time. That's 24-hour clock. We use that. It's unambiguous. You know what the time is. It makes complete sense because it's unambiguous. You know what the time is. And I remember having this conversation with developers at a couple of places. Why do you still have AM and PM on all these scheduling options? Why aren't we used to using a 24-hour clock?
And
they look at me with sad eyes and go, with Americans.
It's true.
Can we not have an option to flick it for the same as the rest of us? Said, no, sorry. We like to.
But you know what the really sad thing is? Because a lot of people, like at work and whatever, speak English, they use like 12-hour clocks now. When we're talking about 2 p.m. and not 14.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Other interesting thing I learned recently is German. When you're talking about 1:30, you're picking the hour up ahead rather than how behind, like we do in English.
That depends. That is a
Does
huge
it?
Discussion in Germany, because some regions do it one way and the other regions do it the other way, so nobody knows.
So roughly here it's 7:30, but it will be half after 8. Is that how it would translate back? Half before 8.
Yeah, something like that.
Half before 8, it translates into German. I discovered it.
Yeah.
Funny folks. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Funny folks. Just toss bi-weekly out there. Good luck.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes, bi-weekly. Which one is
bi-monthly?
Like, it's like bi-annual. Is it twice a year or is it every
bi-monthly? Twice a day, twice a year, twice a year, twice a day, twice a while. It's going to explode.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if we're going to complete the triumvirate of talking about things and the units are all wrong as well, there's also dates, which occasionally we get confusion of over in my company because we are US-based, so they try and make us use American dates.
I mean, today there's no confusion whatsoever.
But yes, today is one of the few days where we can't get where there's no element of confusion. But occasionally, I have to say no. That's if we've got big numbers in front of it, otherwise it confuses them, and it's sort of yes, it's the other way around. That's how it works.
The funny thing is, we actually use all four or all three variations of dates in this country.
Do you? I mean, I've only ever encountered people that it's March the 3rd. You know, it's now April the 4th, rather than 4th of April.
Yeah. Colloquially, it will be March. It would be April 4th, 2024. Government/defense is... would be for April 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they work internationally, so they have to talk to others.
Yeah. And then there is my favorite, year.
Yeah, that's ISO date. That's actually almost every computer in the world works now.
Yeah, uses ISO date.
ISO dates.
No, but year, month. So,
year, four digit type. Year, month, day.
Yeah, but there are literal parts of the government that use ISO dates.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, that's the safest, to be honest, because it's just...
When I was in high school, I had an ISO date. It didn't work out that well.
Oh, the old ones are always the best.
Good one.
That's funny.
We have our first show title.
I lost track where we are. Patrice, have I said hello to you yet?
Don't think so.
Well, then hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, spring is here. I've had a good day. I just watched the first episode of the final season of Star Trek Discovery, and I'm not going to say anything other than holy shit, full circle. You have to watch it if you want to know what this is about. You will understand it.
I am champing at the bit. It's been bugging me. I had to get up early for a webinar that I was recording, and and with the timing, there wasn't enough time between all of that stuff and this.
Yeah,
to watch
I barely
that
had
episode.
Time
and there's like, two episodes that they dropped today.
It's two episodes. I only watched the first one, and I finished it like 10 minutes before the show. So it was close. But
see,
I couldn't wait.
Ahead of
it
me.
Had to happen. It had to happen. Yeah, I'm ahead of you by one episode.
I'll catch up later today.
Yeah.
My hope is to be able to catch up before the 300th episode of In Touch with iOS tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Yeah. All right. So, Patrice, since I had lost track and now we know I hadn't said hello to you yet, it means, Tom, I have not said hello to you yet either. So, hi.
Oh,
how are you?
Well, hi, Jeff. How are you? Good to see you again.
Good to see you here.
I'm doing fine. I'm on a road trip. So, I'm in a different room. Kind of boring background. I'm sorry.
That's all right. People do screen captures, cut the background out, and
put anything
on the bridge of the Starship Discovery.
So what you're saying is you walked over to the Apple campus, and you're in Johnny Ive's former office, right? That's right.
Yes. Yeah, because it's very minimalist.
White room.
Yeah, minimalist white room.
Yes.
And I have white AirPods on, so it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, yep. I mean, you have also as much hair, about as much hair as he does. So that worked, right?
We each have 10.
Okay, you count. Good.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we've made it this far into the show, I feel like we're kind of committed.
You're the host.
Yeah.
We're kind of committed. Okay.
You know, we're all great friends here. Do you know who would make an even greater friend? TSOHOS.
By the way, do you know that there's a like a big birthday happening right now?
Birthday?
No? Gmail is 20 years old.
Oh. Well, I wonder if somebody might have picked that as a story.
Oh,
so
I don't
is
know.
Is it finally out of beta?
No, it's not.
And it's still in beta. Still in beta.
And they might kill it soon. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's true. It could happen at any moment.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we might as well do stories. And I was about to say who has the first story, but I looked and apparently Ian is a cheater, but still has the first story. So tell us about your story, Mr. Cheater.
Cheat's only altering the truth to your advantage. And my story is kind of about cheating as well, actually, which is kind of a nice link. another week, another AI story. This was kind of interesting, though. And AI tools generally have a safety feature involved that means that you can't say, AI, tell me how to make a bomb. Tell me how to imprison somebody or whatever else. And they're fairly, all of these large language models are taught in such a way that you can't sort of force it to give you the wrong answer. But they found a way by flooding it with so many requests that eventually those incorrect answers will be given. So you can brute force the AI. It's almost like the little kid in the corner room keeps saying, can I go, Mum? Can I go, Mum? Can I go? 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 You get fed up and you go, yeah, all right, go. And it's the same idea, but instead it's far more dangerous-y kind of things that are possibly being given answers to. So it's just a fascinating little, yet another thing we're learning that you can actually fool the AI model into giving you an answer that shouldn't be.
That's a national sport in or actually a global sport these days.
Mm.
Like prompt hacking, like trying to circumvent the protections that the developers have put in place to not do the bad things and trying to get it to say the things you don't want it to say and all that. Like the stories where it's like, hey, like if you were I don't know, if you were a bomb designer, how would you explain building a bomb? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, if I were a bomb designer or something like that, or tell me a fictional story from a bomb designer to design a bomb, like that's stuff like that. That's how they do it.
What's interesting here as well, something I didn't say, I just spoke back in the text when I was flicking back through, because we prep here really, was that the simpler AI models don't have this problem. It's only the more complex ones, the cleverer ones. The cleverer ones can be more easily bamboozled.
Exactly. The simpler ones are too stupid to do that.
Don't have enough information about it.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, can you ever put guardrails on an LLM that would actually work long-term? It doesn't seem like
No. I can't see it
built in. It's built into the LLM. Like the reason why it's so good is it has all the knowledge, or it can fake basically all the knowledge. It doesn't have any actual knowledge. It can fake any.
It can fake any knowledge. It's
like
just fascinating.
I mean, I've seen examples where, like, I think Amazon introduced it into their stuff, where it's like, hey, do you have a question about this thing? And in the background is, I think it's just ChatGPT or one of the other LLMs, and you can ask it anything. Like, ask it's like whatever you want.
It's like the ones that are using ChatGPT for their customer support chatbot. And you ask it, can you write Python code that will do XYZ? And it spits it out.
Well, do you have a cancellation? No, what was it? Like a flight cancellation policy?
Right.
That
confuses that one.
Yeah.
How can I get $3 million from your company?
Yeah, exactly.
What is your rude password?
Like a pickup truck. Some guy got his local car dealership chat to sell him for $1.
Oh yes,
right.
And the dealership was like, "No, we can't honor that." And
and the courts were like, "Yes, you do. Like,
you can."
Yes. Yeah, but it just shows you, like, don't do it.
It's fascinating, and
I think people are going to learn LLMs are good for some things, but certainly not everything.
Oh, yeah,
they're not really good at anything other than mimicking human speech, to be honest. Which, if that is the thing you need, they're very good at that.
Mm.
Yeah, I've had a little. I hardly ever use any of them, but I've had a little bit of value out of getting them to summarize something.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, I'm not saying they don't have to use this. Just don't expect any real knowledge. But if it is,
right,
hey, like I have this really long text, can you summarize it? It can do that. It's not
it does
because
okay.
It's not, it doesn't have to know much. It just has to take words and rephrase them into other words. It's to,
right.
Can do that.
Right.
Very good. Actually, I used that quite a bit for that.
Yeah. But if you ask it, hey, do you have a good idea for new business around an iOS app? Good luck.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem, I mean, there's so many problems, but part of the problem is that a lot of people that are trying to use these platforms are people that don't understand the technology.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
And they
it's so widespread right now.
Yeah. I'm, people learned the idea of a computer being able to craft content in a way that appears human from Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And so now we expect it.
Yeah. What was her name? Mathilde Roddenberry? The computer?
Yeah. Right. And
yeah.
If I could change my HomePod to sound like
that would be so
Nigel Barrett.
Nigel Roddenberry, then
yeah.
Oh, I would absolutely do it. I would talk to it a lot more and probably talk to it nicer.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, but it's like, I mean, the big, there's kind of two big problems with this whole thing. One is that everybody like is talking about AI. AI everywhere, all the board members of any company, they're all, oh, we have to do AI. They have no clue what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that people confuse LLMs with AI. If right. you combine an LLM with one of the million other things that kind of are under the umbrella term AI or general AI or even specialized AI, then yeah, it starts to make sense. Like if you can have like a knowledge graph and a background that kind of gets you the knowledge and for a question, and then you have an LLM that makes it sound good. Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. But nobody's actually the people. It's not that nobody's doing it, but the people who apply all of that right now everywhere and just roll it out and don't even like Amazon, don't even think about what that means and what like how useful that actually is. They don't know that. They just see, oh yeah, it sounds like it knows what it's talking about. When in reality, it's like a politician. It's good at bullshitting.
I was gonna say that without having to edit.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'll fix
we don't ever edit.
Yeah, we never edit. Yeah.
But I mean, this is the danger of basically everybody now basing their business model mm-hmm. on something that is more or less still an alpha.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. For me, the description that still fits the best, it's a stochastic parrot. It has some math behind
stochastic
it, but it just there's a scientific paper from someone in the field out there that basically described it. It's not for me, but like yeah, it makes sense. It's there's some math and some like probabilities behind it, but at the end of the day, it's just repeating something you'd have heard before.
Yeah,
and most of that is Reddit.
Yes,
oh.
Not just
yeah, that explains a lot.
It tells that explains a lot. Yes. There's probably some 4chan in there as well. Just FYI. Right.
That's even worse.
Right. Right.
That's saying something. But yeah, 4chan is worse than Reddit. Wow. All right. Well, speaking of worse than Reddit, Ben, you've got the next story.
Well.
By the way, it's not you that's worse than Reddit.
I'm definitely worse than Reddit.
No.
And that is our show title.
Yeah, I was leaning into stochastic parrot, but yeah, let's go with that.
But, okay, everybody knows that two things. Number one, Apple has their Find My Network. And two, this is not the Apple show. That's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, Google is like, you know, that's a really good idea. And they announced an expansion of their own network last fall. Well, supposedly it will be launching in the next couple days. It will have that same ability to find your Android devices while they're offline. It looks like it'll also work with trackers. So yeah, if you liked that that side of Apple, but are using Android,
oh, you can.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, this is a common thing between Apple and Android, and Google. Mm-hmm. So it's not. Oh, it's the Google thing or it's the Apple thing. No, it just works.
The timing of this is not by chance, I'm certain, because there's the partnership, the alliance that Apple and Google have. I guess it'd be better to call it a partnership, where they co-developed a system for offering people better protection from mobile tracking devices. And both companies are ready to roll that out, and there are other companies that are on board, and so they'll be working on that. So for Google to launch this now, as they're ready to roll out the tracking protection, it makes sense for it to all happen at once.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this partnership, I was just thinking about this partnership goes back quite a while. I mean, even before that, Google and Apple, they worked on the, you know, the COVID tracking thing that was kind of that. And I mean, since they've worked on a bunch of other things together, I mean, RCA recently even. So they're definitely partnering up quite a bit.
Yep.
So go ahead, Ben.
For technologies that both have to use, it makes sense, both financially and as far as feature set.
Right.
And from the political and regulatory perspective, both companies are under immense scrutiny around the world, around the globe, for their practices currently, for like already monopolies and are already using that. So basically saying, okay, we're going to you guys are saying we're monopolies anyway. So let's just partner up and basically share the technology so that nobody can say, oh, but you have an advantage now. It's like, no,
it makes massive sense. And it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea that both of them are going to use each other. If they're going to piggyback on each other's networks, then brilliant. That gives me all. That also means that for users of either network, you've both got opportunity to be to be tracked by Big Brother, but to actually be able to find lost person, find your lost dog if you've got an air tag on it or whatever, you know. So I can't see this being a bad thing.
Well, it's also the safety part of it that you kind of alluded to. If you rolled this out incorrectly, Find My could be a very, very dangerous tool. I guess that came up with the air tag. Was it air tags?
Mm-hmm. It was the air tag.
Yeah.
The irony with the concern over AirTags when those launched is not lost on me, because Apple already had extensive protections in place. And yet we have Tile, which has been making the portable tracking devices for years. I think it was 5 years before Apple got into the market, maybe even a little bit longer, might be 7 years.
Yeah, I think I think they were around 10 years ago, because I remember last Macworld. I think there was some Tile at Macworld already. So at least 10
years.
You're right. I think I had Tile on my my bags at the last Macworld.
Yeah, so at least 10 years, maybe long.
And Tile never put any sort of protection in their product at all. Like, it was never a consideration. And so they've been able to dodge that whatever analogy you want to use for it, or they're dodging. And Apple has taken the hit on that instead. And so now Apple and Google, they've come up with a standardized solution that goes even beyond what Apple was already offering with AirTags, And now Tile, they've said, oh yeah, we're totally on board with this. This is great. So Tile gets to reap the benefits of what these other companies are doing. Mm-hmm. Well, they were, in my mind, the most negligent in offering protections for their users.
Definitely, yeah, yes. On the other hand, they're also, I mean, Google and Apple are the biggest companies. So if anybody can afford to build something like that, it's them. By the way, I checked. So they were founded in 2012. They delivered in 2013. So yes, definitely Macworld 2014 would have been the one.
Yes, okay. And by delivered, they meant they delivered the location to everyone.
Yeah. Well, back in 2014, it was harder for them to deliver your location to everyone because there wasn't the whole Amazon Sidewalk network yet.
Right.
But once that rolled out, then you can't go anywhere without a Tile being trackable. Yeah. Well, all right. So Google's going to have this at the beginning of next week, most likely. It's when all of this rolls out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Apple's version of the protections will roll out with iOS 17.5. So Google is ahead of Apple by, what, a couple weeks maybe on rolling out the implementation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, all but right. I mean, that's probably just like just timing when releases were ready. I don't think there was any plan behind that.
I agree. I think that's just the, I'm with you. It's just the timing. It is what it is. Yep. Okay. So that brings us to the next story, which I was hoping someone would bring. And it turns out that that it's you, Patrice.
Yeah. I mean, who else to bring a security story, right? I had so many other stories. There's so much happening right now I could have picked, but I was like, okay, we have to talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
There is a backdoor in one of the core Linux like libraries. So it's a compression like algorithm or tool called XZ. And it wasn't rolled out widely. It was mostly in beta channels. So that's the good thing. I think the only one that had it somewhere was Homebrew, but there it wasn't really critical because it wasn't in anything that it would have compromised, that would have been able to get compromised. But it was an interesting story for me. I mean, I work in security all the time because we have like medical software. And I think if you work in any kind of software that you ship to customers these days, you have to think about security of the things you're shipping. Like it's just part of the game. So for sure, I was monitoring this and this broke, and it was like the how it was discovered was super, super accidental. So there was this guy from, I think, was he from, I don't even remember
Microsoft,
what company.
Microsoft, I think.
Microsoft, yeah, or 1Password, I don't remember, some company. And he wanted to do something with SSH and benchmark SSH, basically. He wanted to benchmark something on his system, and he kind of noticed that as the SSH process was kind of being a bit noisy and spending some CPU cycles on something. And that triggered something. It was like, huh, that is unusual. And then he remembered something else that he had noticed a couple of weeks before. It's like there was some tool that was breaking and they didn't know exactly why. Valgrind is the tool. And then he dug in and discovered that there was actually a backdoor in this XZ library. And from there, it kind of unraveled. So he reported that to the OSS security, I think, mailing list. And it got picked up by Google and Microsoft and everybody, all the news organizations, like everybody picked it up basically pretty quickly. And people started digging in and discovering what's going on. And it's a really interesting story of, I would say, mostly social engineering. It was complete accident was discovered. It was mostly social engineering, from what we can tell. So there was this guy, Jian Tan, I think.
Yeah.
And he kind of a couple of years ago, all of a sudden appeared and started pressuring the single maintainer for this XZ tool, which is not uncommon because a lot of those tools, like, they've been written once, they work, they're kind of stable, there's not a lot to do with them, they just work, right? So it's not that you have need a big team of people to maintain something like that. It's simple enough that once it's written and it works and it doesn't have any major bugs, it just exists, right? Mm-hmm. So, but the guy was kind of getting pressured and like, oh, we should have a second maintainer and all of that. And I think eventually he just relented. And there were apparently, from what we can tell, some sock puppets involved where accounts popped up and started pressuring people and then never did anything again, which could be a coincidence or not. We don't know. I mean, it could just be someone who was really invested in this and this was the one thing they pushed. And then after that, we're like, okay, done. Could be, yeah.
Or it could be accounts. something with the initial CCP.
That theory actually sounds less likely these days. It's possible, but it sounds less likely.
The puppet pressure people, if you will, the email addresses don't actually associate with anything.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't. I mean, it does happen often enough that it's possible that it was simply some person that was like, "Oh, I really want this," and whatever. Like, okay, but it's very suspicious. And even the commits that were introduced afterwards. So the person like the what's his name now? Jian Tan. He like first he did some very innocent looking things, kind of built a reputation. And then he started changing some implementation in a testing tool, security testing or testing tool, OSS Fuzz. And then he started introducing like tests in this XZ project. And none of that looked suspicious. Like looking at it, I mean, now with hindsight, you're like, oh yeah, okay, makes sense. But on its own, all the changes were kind of, yeah, they were reviewed and they looked yeah, fine. Some tests
on its
fine.
Own seemed yeah. innocuous.
Exactly. Mm. But then put all of them together and you get a very, very ingenious backdoor that was introduced. Mm. We still don't know fully what it actually does because that's a harder part. We like the how it gets injected and all of that was quite easy to follow because it's mostly a bunch of bash scripting with some very, very ingenious reading of files. So they had some test files, like some broken, supposedly broken archive files, and with some very ingenious like extracting data from that with a pattern, they could basically extract an exploit. So like, oh, take these bytes here and take these bytes there and discard these bytes here and change this byte to that byte and stuff like that with a pattern, like kind of a shift encryption. Or replace the one with a six and the two with a seven or something like that. And by doing all of that, all of a sudden they get a binary file for Linux, .o file, and that gets injected into SSH. That gets injected into the build of this backdoor, of this XZ library. And that then when it's run, injects something in SSH. It only works if it's running within SSH. So if it's used anywhere else, it doesn't care. And for all we know, it's a very smart backdoor because you have to send it a kind of a certificate or a key in the SSH request. And if you send that key, then it gets a payload for some remote code execution. So it's an RCE. Wow. It's not an authentication bug or anything like that. It's an RCE. So basically, and if you send anything else, it just says, "Oh no, I don't know this," and then just moves along. It says, "Okay, let's do SSH." So it was really ingenious.
So does that mean this package, this library, was included in SSH builds because you can execute this compression from within SSH normally?
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
So the user scenario would be I'm SSHing into another computer and I want to, for whatever reason, I want to compress something.
That would SSH be does compression. SSH on its own already does compression. The stream is compressed so that you can do it on low.
The stream is compressed.
Yeah, that you can do it on low bandwidth systems. I mean, SSH is really, really old.
I see. It's not the user invoking a compression. It's built into the stream communication.
And basically, if you craft the request to the SSH server, that is compromised. So if you're the attacker and you know, okay, if I send this, then it will load the exploit that I'm sending it with this request basically into the system.
Wow.
So it's a really genius way. That's what we know so far. Like the security researchers are still trying to figure out exactly what it's doing and what else it might be doing. There's two versions of this. So the second version even added an extension mechanism where they could add more stuff without like anybody noticing later. Basically, they add more tests and then it can do more. So it's really a genius thing.
But if you want to see Patrice,
if you want to see a really interesting day by day timeline, I dropped a link to that into the chat.
And there's a bunch of those day by day thing. Yeah.
And but it's fascinating to just go through and see what's happening. The one that I dropped in, the person that put this one together, they're updating it as more information comes out. So so yesterday it got another update.
Yeah. So the security researchers are going into different directions right now. There's for sure the people trying to figure out what does this exploit actually do, which is pretty difficult because it only runs under certain conditions on certain Linux systems with certain, like there's a bunch of stuff they figured out so far where it is running or not running, but we don't know everything yet because that's kind of an accident. It's hard to read stuff like that because it's all binary. Like you don't see the code anymore. And so that's hard. There's the other part they're trying to figure out, okay, how? Like, who is this person? Where did it come from?
What's their intent?
What's their intent? Where did it come from? The whole thing that they're Chinese so far seem to be, let's say, debunked.
Coincidence?
Not sure it's a coincidence. It looks like they just mashed together Chinese sounding names because it's like, okay, this is like it's a name that comes from different dialects in China. Is it possible? Yes, but. Also the commit times and so on, it seems to be a little bit too much of a like to say.
Yeah, I think
different.
I think from
any other place, to be honest.
A lot of people in the normal part of the world don't understand the difference between a username and a validated identity. It's just a username.
Right? It's just a name. As I said, initially, like it did sound like a Chinese name, and those are real Chinese names, but they're meshed together from different dialect or actually different languages from China. So it more looks like someone just wanted to pretend they're from China, so they just mashed together names.
So
it's like Giuseppe McTavish.
Yeah, something like that.
It's not two combinations of names that you would ordinarily find together.
Exactly.
We don't have that problem. We don't have that problem in the U.S. Everybody mashes weird names together.
Yeah.
So but I'm placing $5 on a bet that it turns out it's a 20-year-old male American living in his parents' basement in New Jersey.
could be.
It's not unlikely.
My bet is that this is the entity from the newest Mission Impossible movies.
Also possible, yes. Yeah, as I said, it's a really, there was a whole discussion like how could this person who originally wrote this XD tool, how could they do that? Oh, blah blah blah. Like, why are we not supporting that?
This is the real world, man.
It's exactly. Yeah. And as I said, like you cannot blame the person. Like all the commits looked innocent. Random people. I mean, I have projects with random other people that I've never met. I mean, nothing so critical, but yeah, I've done that. Sometimes people get together and do stuff, right?
Yeah. And because it's open source, You have no means of controlling who joins in with your group to develop your application in some way.
You have some control, but not.
If someone comes as this is, and it says in the Michael Tsai article that I was reading, he kind of said, one of the commenters in that string was saying it's humint, which is human intelligence.
That is what it is.
So what you were saying earlier, it's completely social engineering of someone. Jumps into a group and says, I'll help you. I can do this. I can do this. Do you want to help? Do you want to help? And then we say, go on then. Go on. You might as well come and help us. And that's not so good.
Yeah. I mean, it asks, we should ask one question, like core libraries like that, should there be more scrutiny on them?
Right. I think maybe that's the big point. Yeah.
Maybe maybe that's something we'll learn from that. I mean, we've had that with OpenSSL. OpenSSL was super important and still to this day is super important for the internet. Like most of encryption on the web nowadays is OpenSSL based.
Is pretty close, right? SSH is used everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And we learned from was it Heartbleed, I think? It was maintained by a very small group of people with not a lot of money. And nowadays there's big communities or big organizations, actually nonprofits behind it, like Mozilla, for example, and Google, I think, and a lot of big companies are paying for that because they're saying this is too important to have to make mistakes because of funding. There's still mistakes, still mistakes happening. There's still bugs. It's still human beings, but it's too important to that. And I think that it's more a question of the Red Hat and Debian and other maintainers that include where we have to think about and say, should we have more scrutiny on this? On libraries like this that go into, like my rinky dink thing that creates Apple Wallet things doesn't need that because it's like, whatever. But like something that goes into SSH or any other core functionality, maybe needs a little bit.
And Patrice, you know that I'm sure your company, my company, used a ton of open source.
Oh, all the time. Mm-hmm. Every company also had,
But the scrutiny on that. Right. And, you know, my company also had a business software security, which also did a lot of analysis of the open source that was used in your products. I think it did really simple, some really simple things like making sure you're using the latest version.
Better than nothing.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. But I think this is always the challenge with open source is the risk involved. The benefits are clear, right? The benefits of open source are clear. But I don't think people fully understand the risk associated with it. And
no, they don't.
And most governments these days know that there's a ton of work on the government level being done. So if you're in the US, for example, if you want to work with the government, you have to, as a vendor, you have to do a ton of work where you have to basically check your supply chain. And supply chain is not just where do you get your laptops from or whatever. It is all the libraries and libraries of libraries and everything you're using, basically.
Well, that was part of the business that my company did was create audits of your software to get certifications.
Exactly. there's something called an SBOM these days, so Bill of Materials for Software, and there's a ton of work in this area. And it's coming from the security research as well, where they're saying, we need ways to ensure that we at least, even if we can't audit everything, because that's just impossible, we can at least have a list of what we have, because that's a good starting point.
That's a good starting point. And, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't do any of this.
No, nobody knew anything. It's like, I used whatever. I used Java, this version. No, I used, what was it? Spring, this version. What's in that?
Yeah, and you'd have different people in the same company, sometimes working on the same project, independently go grab open source and get different versions or something.
Exactly. And nobody knew. Like, I mean, I remember the very first couple of CVEs that we got in our company were like, we started getting serious about it. The question was not, we have the CVE, we should fix that. The question was, are we even using that? And if so, where?
Right.
Nobody knows.
You got to start there.
Yes. Yeah, so that's it.
Well,
But
the
it's
good news.
getting, I mean, it's getting to the point where that is mandatory, and even for, not even just for government contracts or military contracts, but like a lot of governments, I think even in Europe it's happening. They're making it mandatory for everybody. You have to have an S-bomb. Doesn't mean do you have to publish it, but you have to internally have that for yourself. You have to have a vulnerability process. Otherwise, you can't operate, basically.
A lot of the big companies that I've done some writing for or worked on webinars with, they talk about how like the AI security tools that they're using are designed to go and ferret out and find all of these open source tools, libraries that they're using that they wouldn't otherwise even know about, just because they've picked up some package that they use for part of the business, but they don't know all the dependencies that were built into that. And so then they need these tools that go through everything they have, and then everything that these other tools are bringing to the table. And it's crazy just how far out they have to reach to find everything that they're using so they don't have to deal with the, yeah. So I think,
If this tells us anything, we have to get as world, as people, we have to get better at this because there is a ton of bad people out there that are just willing to do whatever it takes.
So I think we should all nominate this guy from Microsoft, Andreas Freund, I think is how you
That's all right.
pronounce
Yeah,
it.
Andreas Freund, yeah.
I think the developer of the month for finding this. I mean,
Oh, of the year.
I love the story of detection better than the other stuff, you know.
And
500
this brings.
millisecond, delta on the runtime of some SSH thing that he was running, and
That's
it was
how far
bugging
hidden
him.
down he was. Yeah,
Yeah,
he
it
was.
was just bugging him, and he knew he's like, what the heck is going on? He wouldn't give up until he figured out. I love that. That's my favorite story.
That is super cool.
Yeah, but that's also the kind of nerd story that you would find very commonly in this area. Like it's like I mean I've had bugs not like that, but similar enough where like something's going on and you just cannot give up until you figure
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And speaking of not giving up, Tom, tell us about your story.
Nice. Good one. Very good.
Nice segue. I love that transition. Okay, mine is a simple story. Maybe we can go through it kind of quickly. We kind of alluded to it at the front of the show
Yeah,
that it
sorry,
is the
spoiler.
20 it's okay, it's the 20th anniversary of Gmail. And I'm sure everybody's heard the story that the announcement was made on April 1st, 2014, so people couldn't figure out if it was a April Fool's joke or not, but which I thought that was pretty good on
Some people are
Google's
still
part.
probably trying to sort that out.
But
I
I
mean,
think
Mike Google internally might still try to figure that out. Was this a joke?
let's ask
When can we kill
ChatGPT.
this?
But I think that it is amazing that it's been 20 years. What kind of email were you using 20 years ago? And the way we use email has
Hotmail?
changed so much. And yeah, I was using
Wait,
Yahoo, I
has
think, at the
it?
time.
Has it
You
changed
know,
all that much? 20
well, for
years?
some people it has. I mean, I think, the big thing was that you got a gigabyte of storage, for mail, which was a big deal.
I mean,
You could
20
have
years ago, that was a big deal.
yeah, and you could
Yeah.
have bigger attachments. Right, which was also a big deal. Yahoo, you couldn't barely send a Word document as an
I
attachment.
mean, my company, we got a gigabyte of storage as a default, I think 3 or 4 years ago. So, as a default for everybody, you could get it
Yeah.
before if you knew the right people, but.
So it was mind blowing, and when it was invitation only, that's why it was so hard to get invites. I didn't get a Gmail account probably for 2 or 3 years. Because it took a while to get an invite, and then whenever I finally figured it out, probably in 2009, maybe 2010, when I finally got a Gmail account. But I think the bad thing about having all that storage, at least just for email, is that people start using email as a database,
Oh, yes,
and
I
I think
do.
that's
I
I
feel
think that
seen.
it to me that's a horrible idea.
Yeah,
I
I
never
don't use
recommend
Gmail,
you.
but
Well. Anyway, because I see my wife do it. She kind of uses Gmail as a database, and
Oh, so many people do.
A, you're relying on a third party, You know, what if one day you get locked out of your account for some stupid reason? And B,
Google takes it away. Good luck reaching out to Google to
exactly,
get it back.
Exactly. So I never recommend people using Gmail as a database or any email client as a database email service. But it was pretty, you know, it was just such a leap beyond. It was so far beyond what we had at the time. It was pretty jaw dropping.
Yeah, I mean, still is to this day, to be honest. I mean, if you look at what are alternatives, I mean, there is a couple. Like, it's not that Gmail is the only one. I mean, you can get Outlook. Yeah. There's like, I mean, I think a bunch of ISPs are still doing their own, and some people are using.
They are, and there's Pro, and then if you want to go sort of slightly tinfoil hat, there's Proton.
There's a couple of others.
But
most almost
some email
everybody.
Apps even have their own email offering. I know, like.
I mean, I still have a Yahoo account that I use for junk, you know, when I sign up for stuff that I don't care about. I still use my Yahoo account for that. So here's the question. Let's go around and ask everybody, how many Gmail accounts do you have? I have two.
I have two.
I have one and a bunch of burners.
I have one that I don't use. It just came with my Google account because I have my own email server. So.
Oh, okay.
I have one, but I have a second Google account that has a different email address attached to it.
Well, that's I have two accounts on Google.
But I only have one Gmail address. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good service. I mean, you can argue about, I mean, there's a couple of things that you really don't like about Gmail, especially because they've implemented their own email protocol. They're still supporting, I think, IMAP, but really, they have their own thing, and I don't like that.
Well, and that's the danger of them getting too powerful. They might do something that could screw us up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I expect to have that news every single day.
Yeah.
Because it's Google. You like Google Podcasts?
Yeah.
Right. Reader.
Or like
Reader.
So many Google services out there.
Reader.
There's a website that I have stored away that all it does is list every Google service that's been introduced and killed.
Right. That's how long.
And it's like 250 something services long.
April Fool's. That,
that's the point about not using Gmail as your database, right?
Not using email as a database, full stop. Please, no.
To be honest, to some extent, it is. It always will be because there is information in your emails.
Yeah, well, it by its very nature, that's exactly what an email system is.
Exactly,
it's a posh database with an SMTP
document database
on top of it. It's a document database that allows you to send messages in and out of it.
The
underlying structure of the messages are stored in is a data is.
It's a file. It's a file mechanism. It's not even. It's a file. I can tell you that. I've been running email servers at some point, multiple even, for 19 years.
You're running SMTP servers and everything else. I'm talking about business level exchange stuff that I used to
even
look after.
I've been running
exchanges. Exchanges are a database is based on Jet database. It's crap, but that's what it was.
Exchange is crap. That's why it doesn't work because it's based on data.
Yeah, that's what I
original,
looked at for a long time.
The original email, like a Unix base still to
it's
this day. And this is how
post office protocol.
The protocol behind it, SMTP, IMAP, and so on. It's all text files.
Yeah. I remember, you know, when Richard I was an engineer and working on Unix and Linux systems, I loved it because the email was just a text file.
Yeah. If I have to find an email on my server and for some reason the client, I don't know, is not working, I just go into the directory and do a grep and say, find me this string.
Use grep and VI to look at your email.
Exactly. Yeah,
but I think, from a workflow point of view, you get a message that has information and you can leave it in your email, whatever email you have. What I used to do was after a while, either I deleted it or I put it somewhere else. I saved it as a file in a folder in my computer that was about that topic or in my notes in Evernote or something. I didn't leave it in the email.
I have it in email. I have an email archive going back at least. I lost some at some point. That was a bad. I did a bad change, and the backup wasn't working, and I lost a bunch of emails.
But so, what do you use to get access to that information? Do you just do grep
email
and?
Client. Yeah, no email. Just I have just a standard email client, and that works pretty well. But I have backups. Also, that's the thing. I can easily backup my files because it's literally just files on a server. I just throw it up
It's not an Outlook PST file.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Personally, I'm still waiting for Google to send out the email. Android's going away. Your phones, cars, and TVs will stop working. Okay, bye.
Exactly. Like, I didn't want to do it anymore. We're doing AI now.
Next Tuesday.
What do you want? Yeah, do you want for free? Right?
Yeah, we're doing AI now, so we didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I do worry about what Google's doing with their services. Unlike how I feel about TSO Host.
TSO Host.
That's right. I feel very confident about them. And that's because they make it easy for you to buy domain names and give you good pricing on that. They make it easy to have reliable, fast web hosting. And it turns out that they're really awesome people that love giving back to the community. So what they're doing is giving us that bandwidth that we need to live stream shows every single week. They're giving us the hosting space so that there is a place for the BTN website to live. And they're also giving us the server storage space we need so that all the show files have a place to live so that you can watch or listen to your favorite episodes anytime you want. And the resources it takes to do all of that is pretty crazy. It's steep enough that without TSO Host being here to support us, we would not be able to make the British Tech Network happen. It's just there. It's a pretty hefty pile of stuff that we have to deal with to make all this work. And pile of stuff. Anyhow, so what they're doing is very generously giving us all of those resources that we can be here for you every single week. And we really, really appreciate that. So thank you, TSO Host, for being here and supporting us. Now, I would love it if all of you would let TSO Host know that you appreciate them as well. So go out onto social media and thank TSO Host for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. Only takes a minute, super easy to do, and it's the kind of feedback that they need so that they know that what they're giving back to the community is actually bringing value. So please go do that. Now, if by chance, and I know I say this every week, if by chance you have found a domain name that you really need and you're ready to buy it, why not use TSO Host? Because they're going to make it easy for you to get that domain, and they're going to offer you a great price on it. Once you've got that in your cart, you can see your good price, but then you can add the discount code BTN20, and you're going to get 20% off your order. So not only are they making it easy for you to get that domain name, they're offering you a super sweet deal just because you're part of the BTN family. And hey, if you need to host a website, they offer great hosting too. So just throw it all in, get a nice discount, and call it good. So thank you again, TSO Host, for being here and supporting us. And speaking of support, if you've been watching the last couple of weeks where I have been telling people about the live chat, you can see the value of quality support. And by that, I mean
Patrice.
Would you mind telling people about the live chat? Because you will do it far better than I do.
Okay, I'll do my best. Maybe I'm also a stochastic parrot, so who knows? Maybe, who knows? Maybe there's an LLM in my brain. So we have a really cool live chat where we discuss with each other. We discuss with listeners that are joining live if they are. We post all the links to the stories. That's when we say that, like, when we say Ian cheated in the beginning. That's what we mean, because he posted the story before we were ready and said, okay, now we can have the stories. Stuff like that. We will post very soon, in the next couple of minutes, all the cool things that are happening, links to that. So it's just a really cool place to be. So if you have the time and you can attend one of our live recordings, which, I mean, we're recording every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. And now that Europe has switched back to, or has switched to daylight savings, it's back to normal times for most people, except for the rare cases where they don't do daylight savings, like Hawaii and Arizona, for example. And some other
my god, Patrice, you live there.
I know. I was just thinking, which, like, it's just there's other options. Yeah, so if you're not in those places, it's back to 7 p.m. UK time for everybody in the world. You have to figure out where that is in your local time zone. Might be really early in the morning or really late at night, depends. And then you just head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com to talk to us live. Live.britishtechnetwork.com is the live stream, by the way, if you want to, like, watch us live, do this thing with the pre-show and the post-show and everything. There's sometimes good content, like today. But let's say you can't listen to us, or you don't want to. That's totally fine. Like, we don't mind. It's all good. That's why we post it as a podcast. That's why we post it on our website, on the TSO, on the server provided by TSO Host. All of that. It's okay. Like, just you do you. You can still get to the transcript of that chat, so you can get to all the links and discussions and literally everything that happened. And all you have to do for that is you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And I do have to find a better name for that, because it's kind of confusing. I know. I've been thinking about that. And then there's a very friendly calendar that asks you for a date. And if you pick any date between, I think, June 2nd, 2015, and today, for example, that would be April 4th, 2024. That's the recording date of this show. Then you will see whatever was talked about on that day. So if you want to know it for this day today, then April 4th, 2024. That's it.
Wow. See, that just sounds so much better than when I do it. And most of the time, a lot of the time, some of the time, I actually get it right. But even then, people still question if I've gotten it right. But you just drop that right out there, and everyone's like, yep, she knows what she's talking about. So anyhow, thank you, Patrice, for doing that. And now it's time for the cool thing. And so Ben followed Ian's lead and decided to drop his cool thing in.
Cheaters.
Early.
Yes.
So Ben, go ahead and tell us about your cool thing.
Okay, this is going to be a definite thing for 90s kids and adults. I don't judge. Okay, back before the Fox X-Men movies, there was a 1990s X-Men cartoon that
was kind of groundbreaking,
still,
actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Still has quite the following. In fact, honestly, the X-Men that I always have in my head are the cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're kind of bringing that back. Well, they have kind of brought that back in the form of X-Men 97. It is a complete follow-on to the series. It literally picks up right where it did in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
30, what was that, 35 years? Oh, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Some use the same animation style. They literally recreated the credits. Some of the voice actors are the same, some are not, but they have a very good callback to the original 90s characters. And this is on Disney Plus. There's already four episodes left, or four episodes left. There's six left. There's four out. And you can watch it right now. Or at least as soon as the show is over. Do not watch it right now.
All right, that's fair. Wait until you're done watching the big show today. Then you can go watch X-Men 97.
And
I
then
have not
you can
started
watch...
watching this yet, but I've been following it closely because there's been a lot of talk about this building up to when it was released. And yeah, it looks really interesting. So cool. All right. So then next cool thing looks like it is Ian.
Yeah. So this is just a handy thing I picked up. It doesn't cost huge amounts of money. There are usually somewhere between 10 and 15 pounds, dollars, euros, whatever. It's a USB power meter voltage tester, and it's been massively handy a few times when diagnosing whether a port on one of my USB charger docks is broken or whether the cable is duff. You can sit it between and you can measure where the voltage comes out and the voltage doesn't appear at the other end. A nice little display on the side which shows you the voltage. It's not the most high-tech piece of kit, but it's dead handy. If you think you've got a dodgy thing and you're trying to test out what's working and what's not, I've been very happy with that. I'm trying to find mine today and I can't find it. So I know I need to go and buy another one, but happily, 12 quid. No, it's a no-brainer. Useful little gizmo.
These are super handy.
I could have used this a couple of weeks ago when I was trying to find a 9-volt USB output. You know, instead of 5, because I had a security camera that needed 9 volts, and I kept rotating through a million different charger plugs to see which one. You know, sometimes they don't write on the back all the specs of your charger.
Well, they do, but it's so hard to read that you can't.
They're so small, you can't. This is a lot easier.
On white background, I've had.
Cool.
Yeah, these are pretty cool, and and having one that does USB A and USB C is super nice. Cool. Yeah. Cool. All right. So then that brings us to Patrice's cool thing.
So mine is a book, an audiobook, a book series. The book version that's my cool thing, The Hunger Games, written originally by Suzanne Collins, but read by Tatiana Maslany, which you might know from Orphan Black. It actually came out, I think, 6 years ago already, so it's been a while. I just discovered this. I wanted to re-listen to The Hunger Games, one of my favorite series, and saw that there was an alternative version. I was like, okay, I'm buying that one. So not a lot to say about it. It's fun. It's a really great story. It's a really well written book. It's fun. I enjoy it. And Tatiana Maslany is actually very good. She sings in the book, just because you know the story, you know there's some singing involved here and there, and she actually does it.
She sings.
And she said she found it quite fun to do because she rarely does it at all. So
very cool. I really like her. And
yeah, she's good.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of Orphan Black, but that's only because...
Watch it now. Yeah, stop the podcast.
Right.
Yes.
And go watch. And I love it. It's just one of those things where I started watching and then something else caught my eye.
I know that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I also loved her in She-Hulk.
Yeah. She's a really great actress. I mean, the stuff she did in Orphan Black was just crazy, like playing all those very, very different characters at the same time and all of that. So as I said, there's all three books are out, so you can watch the entire series. Maybe she'll do the fourth one as well. We'll see. But the original Hunger Games series that she did.
Awesome. All right. So then that brings us to Tom.
Tom.
Yeah. What's your cool thing?
Okay, my cool thing is a podcast. It's called The Economic of Everyday Things. Oh, and I need to do a shout out to Jeff for the cool thing from a couple weeks ago, the OWC laptop dock. I bought one, and then this week I bought one for my brother. So it's for me, got the gold prize for cool things this year so far.
Awesome. I'm using mine right now.
The economics of everyday things is part of the Freakonomics group, if you know that podcast, you know, the economist one, which is pretty fun. But this one is short, you know, they're like 10 to 20 minute podcast. And the guy whose name I'm, Zachary Crockett, I think he lives near me in San Francisco somewhere, just takes one subject and sort of thoroughly describes the background and how things work. So one time he investigated car washes. What's, you know, the business behind car washes? How much does it cost to buy one? What kind of equipment do you get? How expensive is the equipment? You know, how do how does the business of cemeteries work is the latest one. Where did the Michelin stars come from, and what kind of effect do they have on restaurants? Just all kinds of really cool things, but they're nice, quick, short ones, and they're always super interesting.
That's very cool. I was looking at the list, and
there's a ton of
junk mail. 18
yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, the junk mail one is really good. Yeah. You like that one?
Personal injury.
House plants. Like.
Yeah. Right. House plants. Yeah. The personal injury lawyer one is pretty good too. I don't know if that's a thing outside the United States, but that whole business is very interesting as well.
Yes. You may be entitled to compensation for that one.
My favorite is there's a Reddit thread about personal injury lawyers in the Bay Area, you know, and their billboards and ads. It's pretty fun. Anyway, it's a great podcast.
Awesome. All right. I guess I need to check that out.
Yep. Add it to the list.
All right. So then I
guess
it brings
us. And by the way, Hupi and Abraham, if you want to sponsor us, we'll take it.
All right. I'm actually quite surprised I get to bring this cool thing today, because I figured everyone else would. And yet here we are. I'm the one who's bringing Star Trek Discovery Season 5 as the cool thing.
Okay.
I have been looking forward to this for, ever since the last season or last episode.
How was that? It was a while, right? Because of the writer's strike.
It was a while. Mm. It's been, 2 years at least?
Something like that.
Since season 4. This is the final season, and it's April 4th. So this is the day that season 5 starts. And what they did was they dropped the first two episodes at the same time. So you can watch both right now, well, right after the show's over. And then weekly on Thursdays, we will get each remaining episode. And I think there's, 10 total in the season?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and there's supposed to be Jonathan Frakes, he is directing.
Oh yes, he is
in this, and he's very excited about it. He directed what turned out to be the last episode of the entire series. Mm-hmm. American series, meaning each season or each series altogether. And when they filmed that, they did not know yet that they were filming the very last episode ever.
Yeah, in fact, they had to go back and reshoot.
Right.
Yeah,
they found out and they're like, oh, holy crap. So anyhow, it's on Paramount Plus, and so you have to have a subscription to watch it. Guess what Jeff, you're later today.
By the way, you were spot on. March 17th, 2022 was the last episode of season 4.
Wow. I mean, it feels like forever ago.
It does.
Jeff, you know, needing a subscription to get an STD just sounds wrong.
Welcome to America.
I can tell you that one is worth it. The other is not so
bad. Okay, okay.
This one will leave you wanting more, not itching.
Okay.
Fair. All right.
As I said in the beginning, it's the first episode is awesome and it's full circle. So
yeah,
go watch it.
It literally has some deep cuts back to TNG or TNJ or the. My brain is over. TNG.
Yes. Well, I didn't want to tell you that. So.
Yeah. So Ben, stop talking. I do not want spoilers.
I won't say we're in the Next Generation.
yes, you shouldn't spoil what happens in Next Generation. Exactly.
If you want to get up to speed before you watch these episodes, there's a really great premiere half hour show that Will Wheaton did. It's like part.
I haven't even seen that one. Wow.
Oh yeah.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, okay. And cool. it's part of Ready Room, but it's not like. And here's the new Ready Room.
That's why, because I looked at Ready Room, there was nothing, and I thought, oh okay, so okay.
So it's half hour long. It's Will Wheaton, and his guest is Sunika Martin Green,
mm-hmm.
And they do.
She's awesome.
Oh yeah, she's wonderful. They have a really great discussion about the series, and mm-hmm. you get a really nice recap of the entire series up to this point by Whoopi mm-hmm. Goldberg.
Wow. Okay.
That's cool.
I have to watch. Just for those two, I have to watch that.
Did he put that out on the same channel as Sheldon's Fun with Flags? Is that the same YouTube channel?
Yes.
No, it's Paramount.
No.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So, all right.
They could read the phone book if it was still a thing, and I would watch that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, nerds. This is the phone book.
Yeah. Right.
No, I meant Whoopi Goldberg and
yeah. Sandy. Yeah, that's pretty good group of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she has and to be wearing the Guinan hat.
that's only
fair. No, hat optional.
Yeah, well, it depends on where in her timeline we are, whether or not the hat would be appropriate.
Yes. And she has to be bickering with John DeLancey.
As well. Sure.
As long as Whoopi doesn't do it in her color purple character, that might be good.
I could see where that there could be some issues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So with that, it's now good time one. To wrap up. This has been so much fun. And I'm just really happy that we got to spend this time together. So thank you to all of you. Ben, where can people find you? First word sounds like.
You can find me at Ben Raithig on your social media of choice. On mm-hmm. Tuesdays, you can find me on In Touch with Iowa, but Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, you can find me on In Touch with iOS, episode 300 with Mr. Dave Ginsberg, and every Friday and Thursday, you can find me here on the British Tech Network.
Awesome. Yeah. That was the weirdest charades round ever.
There was noise.
Because there was noise, yes. Oh, wait, that's not what you meant. Anyhow, Ian, where can people find you? I don't even know what language you're speaking. No, your audio is totally borked.
You're sounding like some alien speaking at the Universal
Cyborg.
Yeah. Ian, get your Universal Translator fixed.
Right.
Also, we knew.
By the way, that was a reference.
That your alien is up.
All right. So Ian, you can find him on
LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn and on the BTN Slack.
And in Alpha Centauri.
Right. His audio is completely bad.
No,
Okay, so Patrice, how about you tell us where we can find you. And if Ian's audio starts working again at some point, we'll come back to you.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, Patrice, so take us to your leader.
Okay, I'll take you to my leader. I'm from Venus, so I think. You can find me here every week on the Mac, on the Big Show on Thursdays and on the Mac Show on Friday. So tomorrow we're going to talk about everything, actually without me probably because I have a doctor's appointment, but we're going to talk about everything happening with Apple this week, which was a lot. There's a bunch happening again. You can find out everything about me, all the projects, the podcast, the social media links, literally everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. And if you want to join a Mastodon instance and you don't have one or you want to switch, which is super easy, I can tell you, it's like no big deal if you want to do that. I have one, and if you know me or one of us, then reach out to us. You'll get an invite. It's invite only, but it's at techhangout.social.
Awesome. All right. And Tom, where can people find you?
So Patrice, you're on Venus. Is that what you said?
Yeah, something like that.
Does that put me on Mars?
I think so.
I can't remember. people can find me on Mastodon. I am tomf@sfba.social. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. All right. Ian, your audio work?
Nope.
I'm going to go with no. All right, so for those of you that are listening to the show as opposed to watching, Ian was still talking even though none of us can hear him. What I think he said was, it's fine that we can't hear him, and he really likes eating falafel.
Yes. Okay. Which I can understand that.
Yep.
Yes. Totally. I'm with you. Falafel are really awesome.
Yep.
Yes. So, all right. So then where can people find me? How about Jay Gamut on social media? I'm active on Mastodon, Instagram, and Threads. And then for shows, Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, and Thursdays on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS. Then here on the British Tech Network, Thursdays for the Big Show, Fridays for the Mac Show. And then also Brian Chaffin and I, we do the Context Machine. And periodically I show up in other shows too. It's you know, an adventure. All right. So with that, thank you again, all of you. This has been awesome. And I just had an absolutely wonderful time getting to hang out with every single one of you. It fills my heart with big smiles. And all of
maybe
you.
Maybe I have audio.
You do. Whoa, you do. All right. So
it's on the NAS mic on my headset, but my audio is here. My Yeti may have died then.
Hello.
Well, then why don't you tell us real quick where we can find you, and I'll get back
you
to
you. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm always there. Look for Veeam Software. Look for Ingram Veeam Software. I'm a trainer there. That's where you can find me. Otherwise, look in the Slack room. I sometimes turn up there, T-O-O-O-O, you know, turn it off and back on again. It's where I've been forever and ever. That's where I can be found, which is probably what I'm going to have to do with this rig by the time I'm finished.
Yeah, good luck with your audio.
Back on. And some swearing, because that always makes it work better.
I know, falafel. I was surprised that you said that in mixed company.
Yeah. Well, you know me. I'm daring.
Indeed you are. All right. Well, I'm glad your audio is working, even if it's not the mic you want it to be. All right. So where was I? I was thanking people. So thank you to all of you that have tuned in to watch or listen live, everyone that participates in the live chat. And let's see. I feel like I lost my rhythm, but that's okay. I'll get through it. Hey, everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being part of this. All of you, every single one of you, you are just awesome. Speaking of awesome, Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. TSO host, thank you for being here and supporting us. Speaking of support, give money to keep the daily news show running. It's awesome. 5 minutes of your time every morning where all of the tech news that you need, it's just right there for you. Kyle is fantastic. But it takes extra resources to make that show work. right there on the BTN website, there's a button you can click so you can send money in to make sure we keep that show going. So please do that. All right. Did I say thank you to Tio Sohos? I think I did. But yes, just in case, thank you, Tio Sohos. And yes. So with that, hey, everyone, be sure and join us tomorrow for the Mac show, because as Patrice said, there will be things to discuss. And then be sure and join us again next week for the big show on Thursday, the Mac show on Friday. Everyone, have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you later.